This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
We approach a conversation with Mark Kermode, Dr. Mark Kermode, movies having already received my put-down of the week, so I suspect you're not going to be able to top the award-winning writer A.L. Kennedy. I don't know if you heard our conversation just before the news.
Yeah, it sounded like it was going all right.
Yeah, it was good. It was fine. It was very interesting. But she was talking about making the speech at the Costas.
Yeah.
And she said, well, the room was full of important and influential people and people such as yourself. And I thought that was straight out of the Kermodean book.
That's excellent, isn't it? That's very good. Can I just say, I was speaking to somebody earlier on from The Word magazine who were doing a piece about the movie thing. As you know, they were here. And I was trying to think of a way of describing what it was that you do so brilliantly on this programme, Simon. And then, of course, I sat down here and I listened to you whilst Monty Don was saying spirituality, spirituality, spirit in the garden. And you immediately said, what about gnomes? And I realised that that's what it was. Whatever it is, you can bring it down to the level of gnomes in a single sentence.
It was quite interesting.
He was talking about Zen.
I had introduced the subject, and that was the humorous conclusion to our conversation.
I see.
We've got reviews coming up. Well, I'm going off you as well now. In the Valley of Elah, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, The Savages and The Italians, all coming up. We'll do some box office top 10 in a moment. This email.
Yes.
I'm just trying to find a very important email.
Shall I fill one?
No, here we go. Andrew in South London. Very much looking forward to hearing Jason Isaacs on the show this afternoon with his old friend Mark. I was thinking that since Jason normally listens to the podcast of the film reviews, perhaps you should ask him to send out a big hello to himself this week so he can go home, listen to the show and experience a brief existential crisis. It's a good idea, but he's been moved to next week.
He has. Yes.
So
he is coming in next week.
He is coming. He is coming next week. So in the interim, we have to resort to the old-fashioned way that we do it. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Jason.
We could leave longer pauses week by week just to see if he can add some questions back. And hello to David and all our other assorted friends.
Focus, The Yardbirds.
Oh, yeah, the bassist from The Yardbirds. Pentangle. Much to the excitement of our audience from The Word magazine. And was there anyone else that we need to mention before we get on? Don't think so.
No, but can I say that it was great yesterday listening to the Phil Daniels interview, and you brought up the subject which is always raised with Phil Daniels of, you know, did the scooter go over the edge of the cliff at the end of Quadrophenia with Jimmy or without Jimmy? And he said exactly what I had said to you, which is the first shot of the movie.
What's the first shot?
It's him walking away from the cliff. The beginning of Quadrophenia is an opening shot of Jimmy walking away from the cliff, and you know it's the end shot because he's wearing just the jumper and he's wearing the park. He's dressed in the way that he's dressed when the thing goes off the edge of the cliff. So at the beginning of the movie, you know that he's walked away from the cliff. And as Phil Daniels was then saying, there's a possibility that that character then turned into the main character from Freebird,
yes.
Which I haven't seen yet. You've seen it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Although I have to say, and the subject of movies that include Freebird, that hideous, horrible, horrible thing, The Devil's Rejects, plays out its end game to the sound of Freebird. And I have to say, if I, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd I can take or leave, you know, but after that movie, I find it very hard to listen to Freebird without thinking about that ridiculously stupid film.
Box office top 10 this week, B-movie at 10.
You know, it's not a kid's cartoon. It's an adult, sort of slightly smug comedy posing as a kid's cartoon.
Golden Compass at 9. Still in the chart.
Yeah, the video game's quite a good fun, apparently. You know, the thing with
don't wash your mouth out.
No, I haven't played it. I know people who have played, because, you know, what would I do with a video game? And anyway, they're probably not called video games there anyway. They're probably called interactive.
Enchanted at 8.
Loved it. Think it's great. Think it's wonderful. Take your children, go see it, enjoy, fall in love with, you know, innocent, youthful cinema all over again. It's not Princess Bride, but hey, what is?
Alvin and the Chipmunks is still there at number 7.
I laughed, James King laughed, and somebody about 3 rows back from us tittered briefly and then attempted to suppress the fact that they were laughing at Alvin and the Chipmunks. So sorry, there we go.
Centrinians at 6.
Every time this comes up, I just remember that email that we got from a listener who said, please tell me that there is some excuse for going to see Centrinians, because, and then he intimated that he wanted to go and see it for reasons that weren't entirely, you know, unsuspicious. And I said, no, there is absolutely absolutely no reason to go and see St. Trinian's at all. The fact that it's still number six in the box office means that very few of you have taken my advice.
Charlie, well, as ever, I mean, that's what often happens. You rail against a movie and there it is, turns up.
That was the other thing. You know, I got asked this by that guy about, you know, does it ever make any difference what a journalist says about films? And I think on the strength of, if you look at what's number one, what's coming up at number one, if you look at what's in the top ten, no, it makes no difference. They make terrible movies, we tell everyone they're terrible, they go to number one.
Charlie Wilson's War, number five.
An Oscar nomination for Philip Seymour Hoffman, as was suggested when we were doing the Oscars program on what I think is now referred to as News 25 Live. It was
nicely worked.
Thank you. It was on television and on the radio at the same time. There should be a category which is just the Philip Seymour Hoffman category for, you know, best supporting performance by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
And he's got another movie this week, hasn't he?
Well, The Savages. Yes, he's got another movie. Sorry, I was momentarily thrown there. Yes, he's got The Savages as well, but he's not a supporting actor in that. He's an actor.
I Am Legend is at number four.
I am not as good as the other versions of this story. I am trying much too hard. I am still surprisingly hanging in at number four, which I am surprised by. I mean, the thing with I Am Legend, it's not a dumb, stupid, lowest common denominator movie. So, of course, being up there where it is, at least it demonstrates that it's possible to attempt to do something. But the problem with it is it just doesn't work. And the Bob Marley stuff is just rubbish.
P.S. I Love You at number three.
P.S. Everybody Else Thinks You Stink.
Number two, No Country for Old Men. Got a couple of emails on the subject of this.
Only the good ones. No, in the interest of...
Steve says, sorry, this week I agree with Mark, it's a return to form for the Coen brothers, but I'm uncertain of their motives, since only the characters who... I'm not sure if this is going to give too much away. Anyway, let's go. Since only the characters who deserve, in inverted commas, to die are shown in graphic detail, whilst the good guys are killed off-screen, causing unnatural emotional detachment from the audience, the film is therefore...
Say that again.
The characters who deserve, in inverted commas, to die are shown in graphic detail, whilst the good guys are killed off-screen, causing unnatural emotional detachment from the audience. The film is therefore nothing more than a two-hour murder fest with no moral comment whatsoever. In this respect... Cameron's Terminator is a better film, giving us a decent denouement reason for watching. A film like the repugnant Pasolini's Salo,
120 Days of Sodom,
provokes a reaction of revulsion and is far more honest in its intent, better than no emotion at all. Does the good doctor think that sanitising violence is justifiable in mainstream entertainment?
Well, how long have you got? Okay, let's do the short
30
version.
30 seconds.
Okay, I don't agree with you as far as No Country for Old Men is concerned. I think it is moral. I think it's a film about a moral abyss, and I think that is what it's about. As far as Salo is concerned, honestly, if you think Salo is honest in its intentions, see, the thing about Salo is its problem is that it's fundamentally contradicted. It's a Pasolini movie. It's based on the 120 Days of Sodom, and it is a depiction of a series of tableau of increasingly graphic and obscene events, right, that on the one hand are meant to be totally morally repugnant and a depiction of a fascist government. And it's interesting that the people who picketed that movie and who threw paint at the screen were the fascists. It is also made by somebody who in his life had experimented with violent sexuality, and clearly the key issue with Salo is that on the one hand, there's the narrative, and on the other hand, there's the visual stuff. And I think when people say Salo is clearly not a movie that's inviting you to get off on its imagery, which is, you know, rampagingly disgusting, I would disagree.
Mike, on this, I just want to make a number of points. I mean, I'll edit a very, very long email. I think I'm in a minority, says Mike, in not finding No Country for Old Men flavour of the month. First, the violence and its rating. Basically, it's a pretty bloody gore fest, not for the faint-hearted, and with few redeeming features, as it revels in a kind of clever, knowing way of killing. And so we'll show the guys getting strangled, being shot with a bolt from the gas canister or some other outrageous weapon, but leave it to your imagination. It gets a 15. Second, it's not an 8. If you read this with the doctor's inflection, TLJ just plays grizzled old TLJ. Played pretty instantly ever since The Fugitive, so no change. If Bardem gets a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for playing his one expression under a wig role, I'll eat my toupee. For me, Josh Billy thing in the film, with our own Kelly MacDonald note playing against him, having of an actress somewhere else. Long email, but that's the gist.
In brief, no, and yet. So, really. well argued, although wrong.
At number one, Aliens versus Predator Requiem. This from Andrew in Aberdeen. Saw Aliens versus Predator 2 : Requiem this week. I love this film came about as a result of scriptwriters spliced together versions of previous films. It copies all the ideas and dialogue from Alien and Predator originals as if there was a checklist to run through. Yeah. Alien tongue bites up in the check. Predator removes no reason for fight. Check. Show Alien has acid for blood by melting someone. Check. Yeah. Predator is referred to as one of the metaphor. Check. Yes. If only they copied the effective use of presentation of the original film, it would have been worse.
It reminded me that Rennie Harlin, who directed actually that catastrophic part, Exorcist beginning, after Paul Schrader had made his version and the studio decided that they didn't want it because there wasn't enough revolving heads and spewing. So Rennie Harlin went and made this hideous prequel, and he said, I tried to copy the style of the original so that you could play my film and it would run straight into the original, be seamless. The original is low-key, intelligent, has characters and has plot and has themes, and Rennie's version is just a bunch of stupid, demonic shouting and scrunge and spew, and it's just absolutely the work of an imbecile. And the same is true of Aliens versus Predator. There are all these nods. There are all these things go, look, we watched Alien. We watched Aliens. We even watched Alien 3. And in fact, we made it halfway through Alien Resurrection. But it's like, you watched them, you didn't pay any attention to any of them. You didn't think, the reason I care about the alien stuff in the first movie is I actually care about those people. When John Hurt starts going, at the table, you think, oh no, that's somebody I've spent a little bit of time with. You don't think it's some completely faceless teenager being chased around by a man dressed in a black rubber suit that I can't even tell in this lighting whether that guy is the alien, the predator, or the predalien, which, as one of our listeners pointed out, ought to have been called the alienator. Toilet.
As an exclusive.
TT, total toilet.
As an exclusive for those watching online, because the lights have come on, so we're online. I went to see Cloverfield last night. You saw it this morning. Pull a facial expression which indicates what you thought of that movie. Okay, fine. Well, we'll come to a proper review of that when it comes out. I'm interested in that.
No, good.
Because my expression would be...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's good.
Well, with just a little bit of...
Yeah, towards the
there's
end.
No, not towards the end. There's a through line of... But generally, it's...
That's an online exclusive, bbc.co.uk/5live. We've got a couple of minutes ahead of the next bulletin. What can we do in that brief period?
Shall we set up Sweeney Todd?
Set up Sweeney Todd. Right, maybe play a little bit.
Well, let's start by playing a little bit of your interview with Tim Spall yesterday, because you brought up the subject of Johnny Depp. Because, as you know, this is the Tim Burton adaptation of the Stephen Sondheim musical, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber. Everyone knows the story. Sweeney Todd comes back full of vengeance because he's been wronged terribly. Johnny Depp plays him, and Johnny Depp plays him with a particular English accent, which you raised.
What I raised.
They just give PhDs away nowadays.
Here's Tim Spall from yesterday.
A lot of people have said he's channeled David Bowie. He does sound similar to him, but he sings very, very well, and he acts the singing very, very well, as does Helena. You know, it's they're fantastic in it.
Our established film critic, Dr. Mark Kermode, says it's closer to Anthony Newley with that kind of David Bowie version of Anthony Newley that he did in the early days.
Ha, 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 he, I'm a laughing gnome, and you can't get me, that one.
That's the one. And that's your third singing performance.
It'll be in the shops next Christmas.
Wasn't bad, actually, either.
I just wish there'd been a moment in the film in which Johnny Depp went like this and Tim Spall went, ha, ha, ha.
It would have been good, wouldn't it?
Would have been, honestly, it's so wonderful. So before we get to the review of the film, just to say, you'll hear it in a minute, we'll play you a clip, but it is absolutely Anthony Newley, and I would like to say that, of course, I raised this with Johnny Depp. I said, clearly you're doing Anthony Newley, and he said, yeah, everyone says David Bowie, but you're right. The one person I did refer to was Anthony Newley. So it is clearly Anthony Newley, as channeled by David Bowie during the Laughing Gnome, Hey Mr. Gravedigger, Please Mr. Gravedigger, Love You Till Tuesday, that period.
So that review...
The DRAM period.
The DRAM period, indeed.
That's right, it's DRAM, not DRAM, yeah.
DRAM, yeah. It's DE-RAM, so I'd imagine.
Is it?
I think there's a hyphen in there.
Is that like Aliens versus Predator :
No, it's... Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, we'll definitely do a review of Sweeney Todd, Demon Barber of Fleet Street, because it's coming next. Also, The Savages, The Valley of Elah, and The Italian, if we can squeeze them all in.
The 5 Live Football Daily.
Our latest podcast
from the creators of 5 Live Sport.
Rounding up all the football news, interviews, and discussion you could possibly need. To find out how to subscribe or get an individual episode, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Pete in Dublin, couldn't agree with the doctor more about the use of Freebird in The Devil's Rejects. Appalling use of the song. Yeah, terrible editing considered the entire 3 minutes something before the solo kicks in is filmed in slow motion. Terrible. One of the worst uses of a great song in a movie.
Yeah, and one of the worst movies also. But yes, it is. It's just hideous. And if I were, you know, one of the surviving members of Lynyrd Skynyrd that owned the rights to that song, I would have not allowed them to use it.
John in Limehouse, just on the Bond movie title, coming in being the Quantum of Solace.
The Quantum of Solace, yeah. It's like Pond of Wood, isn't it?
John says that if they continued to name Bond films after the novels or short stories of Ian Fleming, as this has been, then the next two will be Risico and the Hildebrand Rarity. It makes Quantum of Solace sound not too bad.
Wasn't Hildebrand Rarity that the large woman in Benny Hill?
Right. San Jose, California is where Tom lives, and he's listening online. He says, surely the worst use of Freebird into worst film is the climax of Elizabethtown. Remember the horrible pretend bird on fire flying towards tap-dancing widow Susan Sarandon?
I forgot about that.
The poster. Big mistake, 2 hours of hell.
Lordy.
Anyway, on the subject of Sweeney Todd, before Mark pronounces, Nigel in Edinburgh. I'm sure Sweeney Todd is very good. But why do all Tim Burton films have to look the same? If someone had told me Tim Burton was going to direct Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter in a film version of the Bloodthirsty musical, I would have naturally assumed that Depp would look like a cross between Edward Scissorhands and Robert Smith from The Cure, and that Helena period drama would look as if she's just been caught in an explosion at a chalk factory. And guess what? I'd have been right. It's tiring and distracting and too easy somehow. Confiscate the white face makeup and the hairspray. Turn the lights on. Joe in Chicago. My wife and I, both fans of Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, very much looking forward to seeing Sweeney Todd. Let's say we were disappointed. Johnny Depp's acting in this film consisted of his looking wistfully out of the window, planning his revenge, alternated with extended bits of not at all gleeful slashing. I never once felt any sympathy for his character or Helena Bonham Carter's. Maybe we weren't supposed to. My wife put it thus, the Emperor has no clothes. Lots more on that. What did you think?
Disagreed totally. I mean, let's start, but let's hear a little bit of Johnny Depp's acting of his singing, which he said he got away with it once, he's not going to do it again. Here is Johnny Depp as Sweeney Todd.
I beg your indulgence, Anthony. My mind is far from easy. In these once familiar streets, I feel shadows everywhere.
Shadows?
Ghosts. There was a barber and his wife, and she was beautiful. A foolish barber and his wife. She was his reason and his life, and she was beautiful, and she was virtuous, and he was naive.
Jack Sparrow sings.
No, it's not, though. It's, you know, bright lights, Soho, Wardour Street. You hope you make friends with the boys that you meet. Oh, the London. But it is David Bowie doing Anthony Newley in the what's now referred to as the imagined DRAM period. That's what it is. That's clearly what it is. I mean, I love Anthony Newley. I had the great pleasure of meeting Anthony Newley once. And I said, you know, the man who accidentally invented David Bowie. He said, yeah, I know. There we go. And, you know, Bowie's quite open about it. It's fine. So, this was enough to make me forgive Johnny Depp for Captain Jack Sparrow, and it was going to take an awful lot to make me do that. When people say, why do all Tim Burton movies look the same? It's like saying, you know, well, why is it that all those crime thriller books have all got murder and death in them? This is a Tim Burton movie. Tim Burton's sensibility is gothic, right? That's
is
what
he
it is. Oh, he's clearly an auteur. He's absolutely demonstrably an auteur. You can take any frame. I mean, as much as modern auteurs would be people like, you know, Dario Argento or him, you could take any frame out of a Tim Burton movie, you immediately know it's a Tim Burton movie. That's what he does. Funnily enough, in the few occasions that he sort of steps out of that, when things start to fall apart. He does this. This is the reason he's doing Sweeney Todd is because it's so clearly a Tim Burton project. It's got, you know, that whole sort of strange mix of, you know, Dickensian, old Hammer, you know, gothic, dark but funny. The music, because in all his movies have essentially been musicals anyway, because the way he works with Danny Elfman, if you look at something like, you know, Edward Scissorhands, I mean, they are essentially movies that are attempting to burst into song, and that's why his relationship with Elfman has been so close. The other thing is that he's an animator. At heart, he's an animator. And what he did when he animated, whether it was through drawings or through the stop motion stuff or the material with Henry Selick, was he would actually craft the shapes of the people, you know, as you would do with animation. And when he's moved into directing live action, it's very much the same. What he does is he treats his characters in a way like marionettes. Now, that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that what he does is he forces them around. It's not the Hitchcock thing about it's not that actors are cattle. I just said they should be treated like cattle. It's that he understands physical shape. Now, the thing that Johnny Depp has going for him at his best work is that Johnny Depp is a brilliant physical actor. If you give him to somebody like Gore Verbinski, who does not have any kind of way of editing a performance, he's all over the place. He's rambling and blah, 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 and Gore Verbinski is just so pleased he's got Johnny Depp, he doesn't care. But if you give him to somebody like Tim Burton, who's an animator, who has an eye for shape, in the same way as Terry Gilliam in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, in which every movement of Johnny Depp's body is part of the character and is very much inspired by the illustrations for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. In the case of this is the flip side of Edward Scissorhands. It's that character that Burton was drawing when he was a kid that kind of was there in the very, very early animations and has seeped all the way through his work. And actually, I think Johnny Depp's singing is up to snuff. There's a couple of people that said he's not the world's greatest singer. I've always felt that I'd rather hear somebody who wasn't a natural singer singing the part than see them miming. I mean, I would point you towards Marianne Cotillard's performance in La Vie en Rose. I think Marianne Cotillard's a terrific actress. And on the DVD of La Vie en Rose, there's some scenes of her singing the Edith Piaf stuff, right? Well, it's not Piaf, but it's perfectly good. And that film would have had a much more continuous voice had Marianne Cotillard been allowed to do the Piaf songs. In this, it's like, remember Everyone Says I Love You, the Woody Allen film? Mm-hmm. Which are people in that clearly could not sing. It didn't matter. Technical expertise is not what's required here. And in fact, actually, his voice is perfectly fine. His voice fulfills the role exactly as it should. As far as the sympathy thing is concerned, I completely disagree with you, because it always seems to me that what Burton's Sweeney Todd is the dark side of the Edward Scissorhands character. And I feel such a deal of affection towards the Edward Scissorhands character that the minute Johnny Depp walks on looking like that character's dark alter ego, it's okay, I'm completely sold on it. Plus, of course, we all know the story of Sweeney Todd so well. You know the way it's going. You know that it's about, you know, one man's descent into vengeful chaos. And, of course, the story doesn't ask you to sympathise with his vengeance. The story is about how vengeance is, in the end, its own undoing. I mean, it's not a great moral point, but like any of these kind of operatic tragedies, the moral of the story is vengeance doesn't pay. There are other things in it as well that I think, you know, obviously I think the sets are beautiful. I think it's, you know, visually ravishing. It does look like other Tim Burton films, although it doesn't look like The Big Fish. It doesn't look like Pee Wee. It doesn't look like Beetlejuice. It doesn't look like any of those movies. It looks like things like Sleepy Hollow. It looks like Edward Scissorhands to some extent, but the Scissorhands stuff when he's up in the castle. Sacha Baron Cohen is only in the film very briefly. You've seen it, right?
No, I haven't seen it. Right, no. Okay. So I haven't enjoyed Sacha Baron Cohen's appearance.
Well, the funny thing about it is I thought there was going to be more of Sacha Baron Cohen. Of course, there's not, because that's...
He went to school with you as well, and Jason Isaacs.
No, I didn't know him, but he was many years below, and I was never a fan of Borat or whatever. But actually, he has a comic role in this, a sort of evil comic role, in which he does perfectly fine, absolutely perfectly fine. But there's not a huge amount for him to do, because in the end, the story completely zooms in on Johnny Depp and Helena Cardboard Box, and they are both great. You know, they work really, really well together. I mean, I think Helena Bonham Carter is just perfectly cast in Tim Burton movies, because she has that. You know, when we had the guy who made Curse of the Were-Rabbit, your friend Nick. My friend
Nick Park.
Thank you, Nick Park. I'm having a senior moment. And he was talking about the brilliant thing about working with Helena Bonham Carter. He said she is slightly mad in that fantastic way that you need that character to be. Well, the best thing about her in this is you think about when Helena Bonham Carter. I keep wanting to say Helena Cardboard Box. I'm sorry. It's a joke that I've
done.
I made
that.
Years,
and we've
years
already
ago.
Called it Helena period drama, which
is quite good. Yeah, but I like her very much. But she started out in things like, you know, Room with a View and all those. Somebody pointed out to me, actually, Linda pointed out to me the other day. She said, you know,
that's Mrs. Kermode.
No, don't call her that. She's not that.
Just for the purpose of the audience, it's your wife.
But she said, you know, in terms of my antipathy towards Ikea Knightley, she said, look what happened to Helena Cardboard Box. You know, she started out in those kind of period dramas and ended up being this fantastically strange, gothic, weird creation. You know, maybe that's the way Ikea is going to go. I don't think so, but there we go. So I have very few reservations about Sweeney Todd. The one thing I would like to say is I think the BBFC have made a misstep. The 18 certificate, which is given to it for bloody violence, it says it contains strong bloody violence. Their thing says many scenes in which customers throats being slit by a razor, sometimes in extremely gory and bloody manner. Contradicts BBFC's guidelines for 15 category, which says violence may be strong but may not dwell on the infliction of pain and injury. Well, it's theatrical. None of it is real. None of it. I mean, yes, there's lots of throat slitting, but it's Sweeney Todd. And it's not done in a way that's in any way sadistic, in any way. I mean, yes, there's offal. Yes, it's people being turned into pies. It's Sweeney Todd. I think they made a mistake. I think it's clearly a 15 certificate movie.
Some reaction to Johnny Depp singing. H on a very windy A1 says it's more Depp, more Dave Vanian than Bob Smith.
No. Dave Vanian had a kind of had. Dave Vanian was doing an impression. Was closer to Bela Lugosi because Dave Vanian and what's your man's name? Murphy, Pete Murphy. You remember him, Bela Lugosi? He was doing Bowie. He was doing Bowie, but Dave Vanian was doing Lugosi.
Pete Murphy did that Memorex ad, didn't he? That was him
with the television blasting. Yeah. I just remember him doing Bela Lugosi's dead, and there's that fantastic scene in The Hunger in which David Bowie walks into a club and completely ignores Bauhaus, who are doing an impression of David Bowie on screen, on stage, singing Bela Lugosi's dead. It's a great postmodern moment.
Phil in Bournemouth.
Rubbish film.
Johnny, it's more like David Essex. Paigey in Bristol
not.
Thought it was John Hegley. Sarah in Aberdeen.
I got my glasses on my face. I've not got my glasses in my glasses case.
I was lucky enough to see Sweeney Todd was on holiday in the US despite never having heard the original Sondheim musical. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It had everything you could want. Moments of squirm-inducing gore, humour, great visuals, catchy songs. The performances were good, although the only downside for me was that the young hero in love came across as a bit of a wet.
Yeah, but they do. The love interest in Sweeney Todd is complete. Those people are drips and balls, and we don't care.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's fine, because we're not interested in what we're interested in is the guy who wants vengeance.
On DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is Five Live.
Sean, on this, yes, sorry, but you're wrong here. Dr. Depp doesn't sound like Bowie in the DRAM period. He does, however, sound like Bowie in the Baal period. Jim?
No, he doesn't. Sorry.
On behalf of Sean. Oh, yes, he does.
On behalf of the rest of the world.
Jim, on this, all I'm going to say is that if Tim Burton directs the next Pirates movie, I guarantee the good doctor will love it and think Jack Sparrow is great.
Yeah, but you know what?
I finished. Stop sucking up to Tim Burton, says Jim. He's a totally one-dimensional director.
Okay, he's not going to direct the next Pirates movie, and neither is Terry Gilliam, and neither is Billy Friedkin, because they don't do that.
Moving on, lots of stuff to mention. What else should we consider next?
In the Valley of Elah, which incidentally has the worst possible poster for those on the website. It's one of those things which has got a picture of Tommy Lee Jones and Charlize Theron, both of whose heads have clearly been photoshopped onto their bodies, and it doesn't actually look like either of them. Tommy Lee Jones has picked up a Best Actor nod at the forthcoming Oscars, and deservedly so. Written and directed by Paul Haggis. I used to say Haggis, but apparently the name really is Haggis, who wrote and directed Crash, which, if you remember, I liked very much. I mean, it's a certain reservation, but I liked it very much. And I think I was right in saying that I was the person who said, don't discount it as a best film contender. And then it won. And we remember Jack Nicholson opening the envelope and going, and the winner is Crash, in that kind of, in that way that he did. The story is Tommy Lee Jones plays a former military police officer who is searching for his son, who has gone AWOL back in the States after a tour of duty in Iraq. And Charlize Theron is the sort of fish out of water policewoman, single mum cop who agrees grudgingly to help him investigate the crime. Here's a clip.
That kind of warning, huh?
You gotta take that to military police.
Well, I'm trying to keep my son out of more trouble. Hey, I know you're busy, but all I need you to do is make one phone call to his bank and find out if he's made any withdrawals or used his credit card in the last week.
Retired cop or just watch a lot of TV?
Military police retired.
Then you should know. Army has jurisdiction over its own personnel. I'm sorry. I hope you find your son.
Hey, I don't know what you think your job is, but if it's anything like mine was, it's to roll up drunks, twiddle your thumbs, not ask too many questions. But my son, he deserves better than this.
That's the end of the clip.
It is. Sorry, I was looking towards you. There's another line after that, but it doesn't matter. That's absolutely fine.
What is the other line?
No, she says, it's in the end, she says, it's the least I can do. And he says, okay. Yes, it is. All anyway.
Right. Well, we'll do that. Okay.
Fine. So
it's the least I can do.
It sure is.
There you go. That's fine.
Very soon after that, the whereabouts of the son are discovered. And the film then spends the rest of its time trying to piece out the events before that, of how he got to where he is. And what happens is that Tommy Lee Jones has a kind of corrupted file that has come from his video camera, his video phone, of stuff in war-torn Iraq that is slowly being decrypted during the course of the movie. So whilst the investigation is going on, we start to see images, but that's all we see of the war in Iraq. Now, the interesting thing about it is there's been a whole bunch of movies, you know, Iraq movies, War on Terror movies, things like The Kingdom Rendition, Redacted, the Brian De Palma movie, which we still haven't had here yet. And then at the top of the pile is very much In the Valley of Elah. Paul Haggis says that he wanted it to start out as a murder mystery and then turn into a moral mystery, which is setting the bar fairly high, but I think it actually does do that. It's not a whodunit so much as a whydunit. And it's a very thought-provoking work, and it's very mournful, and it is, you know, elegiac, and it is not in any way flag-waving. And what it does is it raises, in much the same way I think, incidentally, is No Country for Old Men, which we've already heard being called amoral, which I don't think it is at all. It raises questions about whether the things that have happened in recent history have somehow had a corrosive effect on our own morals. It's about how the war and everything that's happening with the war affects the people involved in it. The suggestion is very definitely that what's happening is somehow poisoning. You know, what's that Chinese proverb that the fish rots from the head down? It's kind of like that. But it doesn't, like all of Paul Haggis's stuff, it does it by taking the political and making it personal, by taking a big issue and making it into a small particular detail. A lot of people thought that Crash was overly contrived, you know, the way in which the different stories all meshed together. I have to say it didn't bother me because I always thought it was fable-like. It was like a parable. Well, this, I think they will find a lot less contrived in that it is a single story that kind of unfolds in a very quiet, very gentle way. There are no big, sudden revelations. It's all to do with a gradual, seeping realization that the world has fundamentally done bad things to people. And in the end, I'm not convinced that Haggis is a great director. I think he's a very good writer. I mean, he wrote the Clint Eastwood movies. He wrote things like Million Dollar Baby, and I think he wrote Flags of Our Fathers. And in the end, he may be a script writer rather than a director, in the same way as perhaps Frank Darabont. And I do see great comparisons between Haggis's work and that of Frank Darabont. And Darabont's most famously known for The Shawshank Redemption. And I think those two people, they have similar concerns, both personal and political concerns. Tommy Lee Jones is great. It's a very, very well-written piece. It's a very intelligent drama. You know, it's not a masterpiece, but it's really attempting to be even-handed about the subject it's dealing with. It's not hysterical. It's low-key. Charlize Theron pulls off a kind of complicated role very well as a fish-out-of-water cop. She's a single mum. She's got her own battles to fight. The only thing that I think is slightly difficult is that Susan Sarandon has a rather thankless role as the wife who's left back at home, as the kind of the voice, the heart. Because the point about Tommy Lee Jones' character is that he's completely, because he has a military background, he's kind of emotionless. He keeps everything in. And Tommy Lee Jones has one of those faces. It's craggy. It's like Mount Rushmore. He can convey an enormous amount with barely any movement. Because when his face moves, it's like the Hulk. You know, it's like watching plates of, you know, underground rock moving against each other. But I think he does really, really well. It's very good to see him nominated. With this and No Country for Old Men does prove that he really is one of our finest actors.
Justin in West London, enjoying the programme. Agree with your assessment of Sweeney Todd, which I really enjoyed. I wondered if Mark was going to mention the untimely death of Heath Ledger and his views on a career seemingly destined for great things.
Well, I don't know what there is to say about this other than it's a total show. I never met Heath Ledger. I have a journalist friend who spent an awful lot of time with him on set of a movie and said he was just lovely. He's a very fine actor. I mean, Brokeback obviously was the thing that gave him kind of wide acceptance. So I liked Knight's Tale, and he's. You know, it's this weird situation in which he was working on a Gilliam movie, and there is this great big blockbuster movie in the bag already that we wait and see. And I mean, the peculiar thing was, if you look at Total Film this month, for example, he's listed as the 40th most influential person in Hollywood. The Observer 2 weeks ago said he's the new Jack Nicholson. It's just the horrible tragedy of somebody who, for whom literally everything appeared to be there in front of them. So, and as I said, my only personal thing is I know somebody who knew him who just said, and their judgment I trust instantly, that he was just a lovely bloke. That, you know, it's a tragedy, and I don't know what else to say about it.
5 minutes to four. Mark in Torquay, I see there's stacks of Oscar stuff, which I kind of think we've dealt with an awful lot of it, but an observation which we touched on earlier in the week. Mark says, I see the Oscar for Best Makeup is between Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Norbit, and La Vie en Rose. which would Dr. Kermit prefer?
It'll be
to
La Vie en Rose. Well, La Vie en Rose, because actually it's better makeup anyway. I mean, Marianne Cotillard kind of toils away under that makeup, and the editing doesn't do her any favours because it keeps jumping from young to old, so you notice the appliances more. But the fact is, there's more artistry in them. And I love Rick Baker. Rick Baker worked on Norbit. Rick Baker understudied with Dick Smith on The Exorcist. Rick Baker worked on the greatest movie ever made. I mean, I will never say a word against Rick Baker.
Do you really think it is?
Yeah, let's not
go there. What else can we fit in before four?
Briefly on the subject of Oscar nominations, The Savages. Laura Linney, who is just one of my favourite actresses up there with Julianne Moore, absolutely fabulous, has been nominated for Best Actress for her role in The Savages. Also a screenplay nod for Tamara Jenkins, who wrote and directed it. The story is, it's a tough field because she's up against Julie Christie and she's up against Ellen Page. Ellen Page has been Oscar nominated. I mean, remember there was a time when people said there are no good roles in Hollywood for women, and look at that selection this year. It's absolutely fantastic. Very, very different roles. Really terrific field. Anyway, story is Laura Linney and Philip Seymour Hoffman. He again are sort of
there must be a collective noun for Philip Seymour Hoffman movies.
Hoffman. No, I can't.
There must be a whole group of them.
Yes, a group.
They're all along together. So it's a difficult choice.
Yeah. So they are estranged brother and sister brought together when their father collapses into dementia. And I was going to play you a clip, but I think do you want me to play a clip?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Here's a clip.
It's John and Wendy.
I know who you are. The late ones. You're late. You aren't here, and this is what they do. See?
Dad.
You weren't here, I said.
John, go get
nobody.
Somebody.
Dad, we weren't here because we live on the East Coast, remember?
Yeah.
We haven't seen you in a long time, and we're here to help you.
So do something. You're the doctor.
I'm going to go get some money.
He's not that kind of doctor, Dad. He's a professor.
I thought my boy was a doctor.
Doctor of philosophy. PhD. He teaches college.
Medicine?
No. Drama. He teaches theater.
Like Broadway?
No, like theater of social unrest. Stuff like that. He's doing a book on Bertolt Brecht.
I'll release him only if he promises to be good. We can't have him get out of bed by himself. Are you going to be good, Mr. Savage?
You're going to be good, Dad? You're not good, they won't let you go.
You can't keep pulling on everything. This is for your own good. This is your food. We don't want him climbing out on his own. He's unsteady. He can fall.
Okay, so quickly, because we're going to run out of time.
Look, we're going to get the whole movie then.
Philip Seymour Hoffman and Laura Linney together on screen. Laura Linney is fabulous. She can do, on the one hand, she can do like stupid horror like Exorcism of Emily Rose. She can do Truman Show. She does a lot of the small, independent movies. This is an independent movie, okay? It's obviously heartfelt. It's something which is clearly very personal for the writer-director. I don't think the movie itself is a masterpiece, but it's worth seeing for the interaction between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Laura Linney. I interviewed her for the Culture Show, and she described the interaction between the two of them. They're like playing tennis, batting the ball in increasingly hard back against each other, and it is really good to see two actors at the top of their game doing an actor's piece. But that said, bear in mind that films that are actors' pieces rarely tend to be masterpieces themselves. They're a showcase for the actors to really demonstrate what they can do. Laura Linney comes through Juilliard, so she knows her chops. It's not a brilliant film, but the performances make it perfectly worthwhile, and I'm a big fan of hers, and I'm really glad to see she's been Oscar nominated again.
And on balance, what would you say is the movie of the week?
Well, I really like a film called The Italian, which is a Russian film. We can't get to that. But clearly, the film of the week is Sweeney Todd.
You can't introduce a movie you hadn't reviewed.
I was about to. We run out of, Italian, Russian movie, orphan trying to find his mother, sweet, sentimental, but also strangely harsh. But the movie of the week is Sweeney Todd. Thank you very much.
For downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.